interview with Calvin Rosset, recorded on February the 13th, 1991, at the Gabriel Dumont Institute in Regina, Saskatchewan. So we're all set.
Okay.
You were talking about the librette and capel area.
Well,
and the indentured servants.
Oh, all right. So you have it on record. My name is Calvin Rosset. I'm employed at the Gabriel. Oh, you did?
Mm-hmm.
All right. My family grew up in that area. Their roots are, my family's roots are in Manitoba, mm-hmm. in the Red River, actually. And when the sort of insurgents, call it if you will, that.
The foundation of Manitoba.
Right. Happened in 1869. My family were involved in that dispersal. And the entire church parish,
mm-hmm.
like Red River at that time, was based on church parishes.
Mm-hmm.
And the entire church parish moved to their winter camp, which was Lebret. And so it was the St. Francis Xavier Church Parish.
Mm-hmm.
Not all came to Lebret, but many went to up around the Tosh area as well.
Mm-hmm.
But so basically the whole community, the Lebret community, was related because they were related in Manitoba. And it's just
mm-hmm.
like a larger extended family altogether. So they came out to their, which was at that point their winter camp where they operated out of their buffalo hunting. From this
mm-hmm.
was their semi-permanent center.
Mm-hmm.
So that was my the family roots sort of thing, so everybody was related. Well, as things evolved, they got quite controlled by the church in their area. It was a Catholic mission. There was two or three of them in the area,
mm-hmm.
type thing. The priests had a lot of control. The people did a lot of working for the farmers in terms of like picking stones and digging
mm-hmm.
Seneca roots and all that sort of thing. But as a young boy, I lived with my grandmother down in the valley. I lived with her till I was six. Well, my mother and my grandfather. My father and mother never lived together. My father
mm-hmm.
was a farmer from atop the valley
mm-hmm.
who would come and see his half-breed wife and his kids on the weekend, right?
Mm-hmm.
Or whenever he could sneak away from his father,
yeah.
sort of type of thing. But my grandmother, I never knew my grandfather on my mother's side, but they worked for a farmer named Skinner. And they've named an area down there, it's called Skinner's Marsh down there now, but it's a whole area, it was all Métis land.
Mm-hmm.
Script land, and that was...
How did that work, the script land?
The script?
Yeah.
Well, there were two types. You could get land scrip or
mm-hmm.
money scrip. And land scrip was similar to like homestead
yeah.
type stuff, but it was made out to the person with a person's name on it. So
mm-hmm.
it was only, and it had definite boundaries and all that
yeah.
stuff. So it was only valid if it you were that person.
Yeah.
Sort of thing like that. So it was not really hotly sought after commodity.
Mm-hmm.
But although if you wanted that farmland, you had to seek out that individual person and make a deal with them. But
how large would those scripts be?
There was
quarter section?
80 acres, 160 acres, and 240
oh, yeah.
acres.
Oh, yeah. mm-hmm.
And land was valued at $1 per acre back then. So they substituted a lot, instead of land scrip, they gave money scrip as well.
Mm-hmm.
And money scrip was just pay to the bearer on demand, so it was
mm-hmm.
just like cash in the pocket.
Yeah.
So the Métis people had gone through serious, whenever a depression hits, it always hits the poorest people the hardest, the landless people. What happened like in 1885 was they were ostracized from larger society,
yeah.
put on the fringes of society. What happened in the 1930s was the Depression hit them the hardest. But during like the early 1900s, they weren't very welcomed.
No.
And as a rule, they weren't educated. There was no schools. Yeah. They were not allowed to go to school.
Did the church or the missions, did they provide education?
To the Indians.
Not to the Métis?
Not to the Métis, no. The only way Métis people went to school back then, as a rule, was if their mother was a cook or did the laundry
at the mission,
at the industrial school or whatever, then the
so
kids would go
to
school.
So they'd have to pay their way into that?
No, that was kind of sort of like a freebie. If your mother worked there, your father, mm-hmm. then we'll take your kids, you know. You got to look after them somehow. Mm-hmm. It was kind of overlooked. But mostly people went to school if... when settlers were there, they would look at... When settlers came, that they had to have numbers of, say, 20 kids to mm-hmm. open a school. And there would be 16, maybe 18 settlers, children. So they would look around and they would find two Métis children. And then they would get the stand, who looked white.
Oh, I have no problem.
You were talking about if there was a white-looking kid, they would use that to fill the gap. Right.
Right. Mm-hmm. They would put then they would look around for a Métis kid who was not really mm-hmm. dark and could mm-hmm. pass off, and then they would justify opening their school. We've mm-hmm. got 20 kids. They get the school, and then if a new settler moved in and had two kids, then they'd kick the Métis kids out. And that was fairly standard procedure. So,
in general... That's a terrible brain drain in a way, because if you think of the high standard of education in the Red River College...
Yeah, exactly.
And then after 85... All that went down,
no? Non-existent.
Yeah.
So that was, and I suppose when you are sort of perceived, well, you're living on the fringes, you're living mm-hmm. on the outskirts, you're poor, you're treated poorly by the community. I suppose a lot of people tend to believe a lot of this, you know, themselves, they internalize
mm-hmm.
it.
Mm-hmm.
Really pay, it wears on them or whatever. So, in many ways, they take a fierce pride in it, I suppose, like gypsies or whatever,
mm-hmm.
and become sort of renegades or whatever, I don't know, like mm-hmm. exactly, but my particular family, the farmers, while we're getting involved with scamming all the scrip, the money scrip, never finished mm-hmm. quite as finished explaining that one, but
mm-hmm.
The money script, what it was valued at $160, but rather than pay full value for it, the bankers, lawyers, land speculators got together and said, we'll pay a quarter value or a half value
mm-hmm.
for it.
A lot of people really speculate and
right.
get rich on that.
Right,
yeah.
Mm-hmm. And so... As a result of that, they would pay $80 for land, the first land script that was worth $160, sort of thing like
mm-hmm.
that, and it had valued it. So the long and short was the Métis people, about 90 to 95% sold their script land for survival, just to eat.
Yeah.
And as a result, we're often bought up by large farmers. The farmers tried an experiment of bringing European immigrants mm-hmm. to be farmers on the land. And more or less be their hired men and work for them and all that sort of thing. Well, they found it to be very expensive because the people were not familiar with the country, the
mm-hmm.
land. They were also not fluent in English.
Mm-hmm.
The majority of them spoke their own language. And they also, because they were fellow white people, to
mm-hmm.
use a quote
yeah.
sort of thing, you know.
Yeah,
they would feel that they would have to provide houses and schools
mm-hmm.
for the kids and families. So it was very expensive. So that experiment did not work too well. So they decided, well, what we'll do then is why should we not hire the people that we've basically booted off the land by buying the script and use them as indentured servants? So that's what my family became, one of those families who they were treated well. I do like my, all my uncles and all my grandmother and all my uncles and aunts, they just swear by that Skinner family and think they're wonderful. Mm-hmm. And well, I, of course, only been brainwashed too. Mm-hmm. But I think that Skinner family actually treated people better than most. Mm-hmm. But
it's still the direct dependence on an organ.
Exactly. Well, mm-hmm. I think they got something like I had. Well, my grandfather, I didn't know him, but he was dead before I was born. But he worked there. My grandmother was the patriarch of the house, or the matriarch. Mm-hmm. She ran the show. And all the boys and all the girls worked there. And there was five boys and five or six girls. And all the girls worked in the house. They worked in the garden. They worked in milking the cows mm-hmm. and making the butter and looking after the chickens and things like that. Mm-hmm. And the boys all worked in the fields mm-hmm. and picking rocks and horses and whatever. And the whole family got a lump sum. I think it was $125 a month, plus a house to live in, a little 3-4 bedroom shack mm-hmm. and down in the mm-hmm. few miles away across the creek. And that was about it. And there was a barn. I had a couple of horses, and whenever the farmer butchered, he would mm-hmm. throw half of a beef or something mm-hmm. into our way, so the family would feast and famine. We were close to the lake, and in the winter it was like...
That was by the Brett?
Yeah, mm-hmm. well, Catepla, actually. Mm-hmm. Just, and so there was
That's a little further east, right?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah.
About five kilometers from mm-hmm. the east.
Yeah, yeah.
And so there was a lot of fishing going on in the wintertime. Mm-hmm. And trapping squirrels and beavers mm-hmm. and minks and whatever. Mm-hmm. And a lot of rabbit hunting, mm-hmm. a lot of deer hunting. So we grew up eating rabbits and deer meat and fish. And in the spring, we used to, there's a little creek that used to come off the river, and all the fish would come up the creek to mm-hmm. spawn. And my brother and I, we used to stand on this little bridge. And mm-hmm. we used to have pitchforks with ropes on them, right? And we
yeah.
used to have two washtubs.
Oh, yeah.
We'd have races
mm-hmm.
filling up these washtubs of fish. And there were all kinds, of course, and they were all coming up there because the creek mm-hmm. was only 6 inches deep, and mm-hmm. all the fish were coming up there to spawn or whatever, mm-hmm. and there was just all kinds of them. And so we filled thousands of them in mm-hmm. the spring. You spring mm-hmm. That way. So we ate well in the spring mm-hmm. on fish, but that. So anyway, my family, they grew up in that area. All my uncles were working on the farm. But after the war years, during the Depression years, the price of grain really fell to the bottom. Many farmers mm-hmm. had to, I suppose, let go of their indentured mm-hmm. service. They couldn't even afford them.
Mm-hmm.
But my particular family, the Skinner, Dr. Skinner, what he did was he used the Depression and stuff as a real gold mine for himself. He would say, well, don't haul your grain to the elevators in the communities or to town for to the market and get, they'll pay you only 50 cents a bushel. Well, I'll pay you 55 cents a bushel and store it at my place.
Mm-hmm.
So he had built a lot of storage facilities and he sat on it.
Mm-hmm.
And he bought a lot of it from all the farmers and saved them transporting it, the fuel mm-hmm. or whatever, mm-hmm. while they had horses, I guess, to a day
mm-hmm.
trip.
Mm-hmm.
And he sat on it and he kept it until the price quickly rose to $1.50 in a couple of years, and he made a huge, huge pile of money. So he was fairly prosperous, very prosperous, and he kept my family all the way through the Depression mm-hmm. in terms of there as employees. They worked, they trapped in the winter mm-hmm. and like that. But in the after the war years, there was a huge industrial revolution in mm-hmm. North America. Tractors and cars just mm-hmm. booming all over the place. And Canada was set up in a colonial mentality years ago where the West was intended.